Yeah, so to begin, could you just introduce yourself?
Sure. My name's John Salerno, and I'm an assistant professor, still an assistant professor, in the Department of Human Dimensions of Natural Resources, here in the Warner College of Natural Resources. I'm the co-director of CSU's Center for Human Carnivore Coexistence, as well, and I'm also a graduate degree program in ecology faculty affiliate or faculty member. So I'll try to spell out my acronyms, but remind me if anything's less clear. And I'm an ecologist, and so that's my disciplinary background. I'm also a social scientist, so I'm kind of in the minority. We think about ecology being a great big tent or warehouse, and so my training's in ecology, but I deal with people. Yeah, I'll stop there. That's my introduction, but I can talk about interests or research programs. I imagine that's kind of what your questions are about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was curious, what are some like ongoing research mm-hmm. projects you have right now?
Yeah, for sure. I guess my longest term ongoing work is based in East Africa, and I ask questions about human land use and land systems, and in particular migration of agropastoralist people. So I'm really interested in these two-way interactions between agropastoralists, so people who farm and keep livestock, and the environment. And so it could be anything from soil fertility to range condition to climate or rainfall and temperature. And so people use the landscape, and they interact through their livestock or through farming with the land system, and rainfall plays a big role. And oftentimes with increasing population densities, both through migration and also through demographics, often there'll be a decline in the ecosystem services provisioned to people. In other words, like land degradation in a land systems context. And so one great adaptation strategy is to move. And so people will take their livestock and their families, and they'll move to another area where they have kin or relations. There are always social networks that mediate those movements. And then they begin farming and raising livestock in usually a less densely populated area. And so a lot of the questions I like to ask or I'm interested in asking are about how people make those adaptive decisions, and under what conditions are those decisions precipitated, and then what that means for the larger land system. And I've always been really interested in biodiversity conservation and efforts to maintain or protect biodiversity and wildlife in particular. And so people using the landscape in East Africa in particular, in Tanzania, where a lot of my work has been going on for a while, it's a great big landscape of protected areas, national parks and game reserves. And so people moving around that landscape often settle near the boundaries of those parks and reserves. And owning a lot of livestock, they frequently interact with large carnivores. And then farming crops, they frequently interact with a lot of different herbivores, but mostly elephants. And so human wildlife interactions is another big part of my work.
What are like some of the methods that you mm-hmm. go about collecting work in Tanzania?
For sure. So I'm a computational social scientist or a quantitative ecologist, and so in the Tanzania project specifically, I do a lot of household interview work, and so either myself or with teams, if it's a larger project, we go out and talk to people and conduct quantitative surveys to measure everything from the number of people in the household and the amount of time that they've lived in their current house to what their previous locations were and their experiences with the environment and wildlife were in the past. Along with a lot of other things that are related to people and their livelihoods. And we combine those household data often with observations of the landscape. And so we do that through field observations, like for example, of a farm plot or of a rangeland area, and we can associate those field observations with efforts to measure the environment in a remote sensing context too. So I don't do a lot of remote sensing. I have a lot of super smart colleagues who do all the remote sensing work. And so a lot of the migration work in particular recently has been trying to link households and their land use activities presently and into the past with records of remote sensing data, observations from remote sensing platforms on land condition in different ways. And then I have a lot of collaborators on the ground who've been particularly practitioners, who've been running conservation organizations and have been maintaining data on human-wildlife interactions. And so a lot of my wildlife work relies on those collaborators who are doing conservation work. And these are things like observations of livestock depredation by carnivores or elephant crop conflicts.
Sweet.
In the area, yeah.
So I was also reading that you kind of like model and do some statistical analyses mm-hmm. or analysis of your research after the data collection. Can you kind of describe mm-hmm. the modeling process and what questions you hope to answer
sure.
through this?
Sure. So the statistical and simulation or process modeling approaches are just techniques to try to answer those core research questions about how people use the land and how they interact with wildlife and what makes them move and what are the impacts of those movements or their land use activities. I don't want to get into the weeds too much, but we use a lot of statistical inference and regression techniques to test hypotheses and ask questions of those household data or the field data that I mentioned. And then more recently, mostly because of collaborations with a number of people and a current postdoc, specifically Reka Warrior, is working on a simulation or a process modeling approach to conduct scenarios in a virtual environment, an agent-based model in particular. And so we create this simulation model to be similar to our system, based on some theories and based on some observations. And then after we construct this model, we can ask questions about how the environment might work under certain conditions or certain scenarios.
Sweet. Also, I was just like reading your lab website
before
coming to mm-hmm. kind of get some general background knowledge. But one of the things you were talking about mm-hmm. was climate change affecting mm-hmm. Ugandan farmers. Mm-hmm. And then you talked about like mental model of climate.
Right.
And I was just wondering if you could elaborate, like what does that mean?
Sure. It means a couple different things. The language on the website was probably vague. So when we say mental models, we just mean somebody's understanding of how something or a system works. And so we could have mental models about how anything works. It's also a technique to gather data. And so there's a smart person at Michigan State University, Stephen Gray, who created a really neat software that allows you to make box and arrow maps. And so it's a neat interactive software, and we've used it in a couple different contexts here in the US and in other places to try to measure people's understanding of the system. And so sitting down with somebody who has experience in farming or livestock keeping, we can, through kind of a narrative exercise, have them tell us about their belief and how different parts of a system are put together. For example, how rainfall in another place might shape how they anticipate rainfall falling in their location, and they might make certain decisions based on that knowledge, and then those decisions will translate into better or worse yields depending on other conditions like markets and things like that. So yeah, mental model is simply a representation, boxes and arrows, a belief about how things work.
So you kind of use that for multiple projects.
Yeah, for multiple projects. I talked mostly about the work in Tanzania, but the work with Ugandan farmers is focused primarily on rainfall. And so it has a few different goals. One of them is to identify how important Congo Basin moisture versus Atlantic and Indian Ocean moisture, or sorry, Indian Ocean moisture are in controlling the rainfall patterns, the changing rainfall patterns in Western Uganda. And so there's a lot of stable isotopic work going on and a lot of remote sensing historical work with weather station data. But we're talking to farmers and gathering farmer observations and perceptions about past rainfall conditions and trying to use all those data together to try and make some inferences about the changes that are going on and how farmers are adapting. But the mental modeling software in particular, we've also used it. We have an adaptive governance project on wildfire that's based here in Colorado. So thinking about how individuals and groups make decisions about wildfire risk mitigation and vulnerability reduction.
Sweet. This is kind of a very broad question.
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm.
But I was just curious, and I think you like answered kind of parts
mm-hmm.
of it throughout.
That's okay.
But just how do you go about conducting social research, such as decision making, mm-hmm. which you talked about a little bit, and how do you tailor this for like ecology
mm-hmm.
geared questions?
Right. So yeah, so it's a great question. So in terms of tailoring questions or the framing of questions kind of within the field of ecology, pretty much everything we do is related to how humans interact with their environments, and then in turn, how human behaviors will shape environments, and then subsequent human behaviors based on environmental change. And so the framing of people interacting with their environments and those environments changing, and it's all sort of within this broader framing of ecology in particular. And some of the work also focuses on how individuals or institutions or groups of people create knowledge and share knowledge, and how knowledge is kind of transmitted through a community. So all that's kind of firmly within the framing or the discipline of ecology. And then in terms of methods, we've talked about a few of them. A lot of the work, the difficult work, is measuring human perceptions and beliefs and human behavior. And so some of the more traditional methods we talked about would be just household surveys. And we've been doing more and more qualitative interview work more recently, particularly with the Wildfire Project. And then we've experimented with some different tools like Mental Modeler to try and measure people's belief systems or at least understanding of a particular set of interactions. And then we can also, through some different modeling techniques, kind of understand how all those pieces put together and how those decisions might change or interact with each other.
Sweet. The rest of the questions are kind of like about you.
Sure,
and
sure.
Your
yeah,
journey
yeah.
In your research, but like what led you to this field and wanting to make this your career?
Oh gosh. I've always just been really excited about the environment, really excited about spending time outside, and really curious about why things were the way they were. My undergrad degree is in biology and history. I think early on in my career, like kind of undergrad days and a few years after, I was very much interested in wildlife conservation and wildlife ecology specifically. But then through a couple different jobs and kind of a pathway after my undergrad, just started to realize that on one hand, studying or being interested in or dealing with human behavior is absolutely essential if you're going to conserve wildlife or conserve the environment more generally. And then also finding that with that focus, like, human behavior was super fascinating. And so kind of through the sequence of I guess realizations, that led me to being most interested in kind of the way humans interact with their environments. And then I spent quite a bit of time figuring that out after my undergrad, and then went to grad school, and most of my work since starting grad school has been kind of in this area we've been talking about.
Sweet. I guess like in Africa when
mm-hmm.
you're doing research, like what have been some of the most like eye-opening, unexpected experiences you've had?
Oh wow. I mean, I think in general, I'm basing this on like my very narrow slice or my experience in one tiny place in the western part of the country. But doing field work was just on one hand, just an incredible incredibly fascinating experience. Just like being in an environment where you don't know anything, you're surrounded by people who know everything about the place that they're in, and also those people were incredibly generous and really welcoming, and so for the most part, and so just being able to learn and experience and having like a lot of very very supportive people kind of at all the different levels, but including, I mean, I think most importantly, all the community members. Doing field work during grad school in this particular place has been great. And then maintaining a lot of those relationships and new relationships in different parts of I guess, Tanzania, where we've been talking about most. That's been a wonderful part. I feel really grateful for those relationships, interactions, and all of those people. But gosh, like, I think working in an area where, I guess to maybe put a point on it, food insecurity is a big challenge, right? And so that's associated with all kinds of drivers and then all kinds of ways that that's expressed, right? It's really challenging, you know, it's hard to be in a place where food insecurity is so challenging and observe bad rainfall years and livestock disease and all these different things that make doing your livelihood really, really challenging for the people you're working with. And so that has just been, you know, it's always really challenging to see those kinds of systems and you know, understand that your science is not really going to do anything, certainly not immediately, to solve some of those problems. We tell ourselves that ultimately it's going to have cumulative positive impacts, but yeah, that's hard to see. But that, oftentimes those challenging conditions are set right alongside just kids playing with soccer balls and just this like this joy and people experiencing the environment in lots of really amazing positive ways. So that kind of juxtaposition has always been just really kind of enlightening and wonderful mm-hmm. to see.
Do you have like advice for students or like early career professionals who want to do similar work to what you're doing, like if they're just starting out?
Yeah, I think so. I guess I have a couple different answers here. I mean, a lot of it depends on the position that people are in and both their, you know, their background and their interests, where they're coming from. You know, if you think about undergraduate students, what kind of degree they're pursuing. I mean, I think that research in the ways in which people interact with their environments and just the complexity of systems, that research is only going to become more important and potentially more necessary and hopefully impactful. And so I think steering people to, you know, any part of that larger challenge, I think is where I would optimistically steer people toward, because it's just a great big challenge and getting a lot of new creative ideas is gonna be absolutely necessary. And so my recommendation for having impact is to go into those fields, which are, especially for a grad student, incredibly challenging to grapple with, because it's hard to do a master's or a PhD on multiple things working together, right? That's just kind of how it is. But yeah, but I think keeping your eye on the larger scale policy efforts as a way to guide your graduate school training is always smart, like understanding what the IPCC and the you know, IPPES, all these, you know, these larger multilateral agreements on climate change and biodiversity and ecosystem services and wildlife as well. It's important to understand what form the policy context is taking, because that can often identify like productive research areas where people can really make big impacts and I don't like this word all the time, but like synergize with ongoing work, and especially at the science policy interface. I think mm-hmm. that can be super important. But it doesn't have to be international. It doesn't have to be kind of at the global scale. It can also be, you know, understanding what the relevant pieces are to pay attention. We were talking about wildfires, so understanding where the State Forest Service and where the U.S. Forest Service and Colorado and U.S. Fire policy are sitting right now, like to guide you into mm-hmm. relevant questions in those fields. That's also super important.
Sweet. Do you have anything that I didn't ask you that you think is important?
Gosh,
to say?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think one of the things that it's along the lines of, I wouldn't call it advice to students, but one of the things that I think the Africa Center does really well and I think is important to keep in mind as a student is just having a supportive community behind you, and that can be your if it's a graduate student or if it's an undergraduate, having mentors or committee members, those can be the same people, or spaces like Africa Center or SOGIS or even a lab group. You know, they can take many, many forms, but just having a super supportive community, because grad school is really hard, your undergraduate degree is really hard, being a postdoc is hard, you know, all these things are grappling with really challenging things. And so having like a very supportive community is probably the most important thing, I think. If that's a way that you thrive as a student, to have, you know, supportive people around you, then the Africa Center, CSU, I think is a great place where you can find that. And it's probably the most important thing to make sure it's there before launching off into all the details of an undergraduate degree or, mm-hmm. or a grad degree.
Sweet.
So keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Take care of yourself, I guess, is the short end of it.
That's all I had to ask.
Fantastic.
But thank you so much for speaking with me.
No problem.
For the Africa Center.
Yeah, thanks for coming by. Yeah, it's been a pleasure.